Om Agnatimanandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Sumilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namah Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Upakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Vanshakalpatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhai Vraja Patitanam Prabhanebhyo Bhai Savebhyo Namo Namah. A thought, one thought before we begin is that right now we should know, and we'll see tomorrow very clearly, that Giriraj is right over there. And one of the mysteries of lighting is that all the light is on this side and we can't see Giriraj through the curtain. But guess what? When you have lighting over here, Giriraj can see us. So we're here under the shelter of Giriraj, who can see us very clearly. So we are under his watchful eye, even though he is hidden from us in many ways. As Giriraj is hidden from us, there are many mysterious things hidden from us in Vrindavan, and many mysterious things hidden from us, of course, in life, in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the holy names, in the association of devotees, in the deities. But here, we wish to say something about what is hidden from us in the Vedic literatures, and gradually we'll get to an aspect of my presentation on which is called the sweet flow of Krishna's Komara Lila, his ages up to the age of 5 years old. But just speaking about Krishna is very mysterious, because why is it mysterious? Because he is transcendental. We use that word transcendental many, many times. Prasadam is transcendental, this is transcendental, and that is transcendental. But what does transcendental mean? We use it so many times, we forget what it means. It means beyond. It means beyond our material experience, beyond the three modes of material nature, beyond space, material space and material time. So we have a problem. We're speaking about the transcendence, including Vrindavan, including Giriraj Govardhan, which is beyond space and time and the three modes of material nature. And we're speaking about it with our tongues, and we're hearing about it with our ears, and we're reading it with our eyes. And how can our consciousness comprehend something that's beyond, completely beyond our experience? Because our consciousness is filled with only what we've experienced, basically. So this question of how we can learn something beyond our experience, when the very means, meaning our eyes to read and our ears to hear and our tongues to speak, are all material and limited to matter. So how can these material things perceive the eternal and the transcendental, that's by definition beyond everything we've experienced, like a person in the famous example of that Plato gave about the person in the cave who has a fire behind him, and all he sees is shadows in front of him. And this is all we've experienced in this life, and for so many lives, we experience the shadow of reality. So how can we conceive of true reality, Krishna, his transcendental position, with the consciousness and the eyes and ears and etc. that we have? So in Varshana, we read something by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadamani near the very end, where he's explaining how when he actually has a Sakshat Darshan of Krishna, when he actually sees Krishna, he says that it's completely different. Krishna is completely different than what I had conceived of. Previously, I've compared Krishna's complexion to a monsoon cloud, his eyes to lotuses, and his dhoti to lightning. But now, actually seeing Krishna, I see that Krishna is actually in a completely different realm. So Maharaj Prickett asks this question very close to the end of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. How can the Vedas give us transcendence? How can the Srimad Bhagavatam, written by material printing presses, perceived by my eyes and ears, and spoken by my tongue, how can it speak transcendence? How can it enter? How can the light of spirit, of transcendence, of Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavan, Vrindavan, and all the pastimes, how can it enter the darkness of my heart, the darkness of my consciousness? So, very, very interestingly, and this is the prayers to the personified Vedas, if I had asked probably how many of you have read the Bhagavatam, quite a few devotees will raise your hand, then I'll ask how many of you read the prayers of the personified Vedas, and then and how many of you have actually studied it and understand what the message of the personified Vedas, it's the whole Vedas. Are being spoken of in a very concise way. And this is the question that is asked. How can the Vedas reveal transcendence? This is the question that sparks this 87th chapter. And in the second verse, the question is asked in the second verse, in the first verse, and then the second verse, there's an answer that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary says most people will think that this answer doesn't have anything to do with the question. Like an example he gives is like if someone says what time it is and you answer it's raining outside. I mean, it's that different. And it takes a great acharya like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to explain it, and that he does in very, very philosophical terms. But there's one point that he makes at the very end of his comment on the second verse that is easy to understand and it gives us hope. And he quotes a verse from the Gopal Tapani Upanishads, and he says, the supreme, this is the verse, listen very, very, very carefully and see what Krishna is compared to. It describes the form of Krishna. The Supreme Lord, appearing in his two-armed form, had divine lotus eyes, a complexion the color of a cloud, and garments that resembled lightning. He wore a garland of forest flowers, and his beauty was enhanced by his pose of meditative silence. So, hearing a wonderful description of Krishna and the pastimes that are going to be described from the birth of Krishna to Sankachuda Leela to Kaliya Krishna's, that Krishna's dancing on Kaliya, and I'll be speaking on Krishna's boyhood pastimes, the Maharaj, he will reveal to us very soon what he is speaking about. We can think about them, but are we just imagining it? Because after all, Krishna is on this realm. He's on the other side of the material energy. And here I am very, very trapped and limited by the material energy. It is just my imagination to take this verse that Krishna is the color of a cloud and his dhoti is the color of lightning. Should I understand that this is just my material conception? And should I not think about Krishna? Because I don't want to deal with the mind as if the mind's imagination is the same as transcendence. So Vishwanath asks that question. And he answers it on three different levels. The first level is the perfected soul whose intelligence, as like described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, was he actually has purified mind, purified eyes, purified consciousness. He actually, when he hears these descriptions, he actually is face to face with Krishna instantaneously. When Maharaj Prickett heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from the lotus-like lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, the hearing of that transcendental sound vibration entered his purified heart, and he could perceive Krishna fully. He experienced Krishna in this. So much so that in the beginning of the Kaliya Leela pastime, Sukadeva Goswami didn't want to even speak it, practically speaking. He gave a short summary of it because he feared that Maharaj Prickett would be in complete anxiety hearing that Krishna was enwrapped in the coils of a snake. He would have that experience. He would undergo the distress. It's not for the devotees, the pure devotees, when they hear the Bhagavatam. It's not like when if someone watches the news or a documentary movie and we see bombs going off somewhere and we sit there and we're eating or something like that and just looking at it and there's no sambandha, there's no relationship with it. No. When these exalted souls hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they experience it fully. So that's the first answer for the Siddha devotees. And the second answer he gives, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is for the Sadhaka devotees, the practitioners. So he says that Krishna's spiritual eyes, his body, and his clothing, as described in the verse, are not actually perceivable for the Sadhaka. But the devotee, the sadhaka devotee, he concentrates his mind. And here the word is concentrates his mind. He focuses his mind on these descriptions. Because we're going to be hearing so many descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. And if we are not wide awake and with consciousness open, and making a sincere attempt to actually hear what is being said, it is different from concentrating. So the devotee, he concentrates his mind in this way, and he gradually becomes joyful under the impression, not the fact. But he's joyful under the impression he's actually perceiving something wonderful by meditating on the Lord. But Vishwanath said it's only an impression. We're just getting a glimpse of the wonder from a distance, from a far distance, of the wonderful sweetness of Krishna. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked about, do you love Krishna? You're crying. You have so much Krishna. He said, Naganda astu. I don't have the slightest bit of love of Krishna, because if I had love for Krishna, how could I even be alive in this world, in this body, being separated from Krishna? But yet, the process of just hearing and getting a distant glimpse of Krishna fills one with joy. But yet, it is not Krishna. When Mahaprabhu would hear about Krishna, tears would be streaming down his eyes. His body would horripilate. It would burst into goosebumps. His hair would stand on end. He would go running and running. He would see Chatak Parvat in the land of Jagannath, and run towards it, thinking it was Govardhan Hill, spontaneously, naturally attracted to Krishna and his pastimes. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? So the devotee, hearing, gets something, and it gives him joy. But Krishna is something else, something far more wonderful, but he is a sadhaka. So he is meant to progress, to achieve that wonder. So that's the second point of view that Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains. And the third point of view is, how does Krishna look at this? There's what the siddha is experiencing, the perfected devotee, and then what the sadhaka, the practitioner, is experiencing. But what does Krishna experience? So someone like Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he is very, very special. He can tell us, and he does tell us, what Krishna experiences in this regard. Does he think, does he look down from his throne above, up there somewhere in the sky, and looks down and says, these foolish people, they think that they are perceiving me, but they are not actually perceiving me. Ha, ha, ha. Thunderbolt. No. He has boundless mercy. That means, what does boundless mercy mean? Huh? Never ending, yeah? Limitless, unlimited mercy, it descends. How else are we here? How else am I here in Vrindavan? He's moved. His touch, his consciousness, his heart, his being is moved by his boundless mercy. And he thinks, oh, how wonderful it is that my devotee is meditating on me. That is Krishna. And then, when the sadhaka's devotion matures step by step, Krishna brings that beloved devotee who has been concentratedly meditating upon him. He brings that devotee to his feet as it matures, and he engages him, which is his greatest gift. He engages him in his confidential service. He allows him to take part in his unlimited transcendental pastimes. How wonderful it is that Krishna has hidden the highest pastimes in plain sight, the dealings of Sisi, Radha, and Krishna, in plain sight, spoken about. But one who is infected by material consciousness, all he perceives is his material consciousness. So Krishna, as the devotee matures, he reveals more and more about himself. And by his mercy, he gradually brings him to his lotus feet and engages him in his confidential loving pastimes. So in this way, by the mercy of the Lord, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Vedas, and the holy name, as we make our attempts to associate with Krishna this way, and the Dham, and the deities and the devotees, as we make our attempts to associate with Krishna in this way, Krishna, by his boundless mercy, reveals more and more about himself by his boundless mercy. So that is why we are here, to make our little attempt to get closer to Krishna. And we have, as Maharaj so wonderfully explained, and got me inspired, and the little spark started to, some fire started coming, a little bit, that we are here to get closer, and we cannot see him, but he can see us. So he sees our attempts, and he's Bhava Grahi Janardana, and he is very kind in his reciprocation with our humble and insignificant attempts. So let us take a very firm vow during our time here at this retreat, where we really have nothing else to do. We've come here. Retreat means retreat from our ordinary life for a time of focus on hearing and chanting and associating with Krishna in this way, in the association of devotees in this holy place, Vrindavan Dham. So what I'm going to speak about is this, these leelas, these very, very charming boyhood leelas of Krishna that have so many hidden messages, chapters 10 through chapters 12 of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Does anyone know how chapter 10 begins of the 10th canto? Anyway, after tomorrow, no one will be able to say, I don't know, because you'll know. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna.